Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On the list of issues that you feel your team might have, is Brad Stevens on the list?
No. And that's not to say that Brad can't do some things better, because I don't see what the things are that he needs to do better, but he does. And he feels like he needs to do better. And, you know, we all have a role to play in this, and success has many fathers, and failure is, I can't remember what the saying is, the rest of that saying is.
Dies an orphan.
Is an orphan, yeah. So I think that, I think that we all have things that we can do better. I guess is the best way to put that. And we're working on that. And I know Brad he's relentlessly working on that every day. But he's the least by far of all the things that I'm worried about as we prepare for the postseason.
That was Danny Ainge on with Dale and Keith earlier today. And as I was in my office listening to Danny Ainge make excuse after excuse after excuse, I thought to myself, well, that's it. This team has really given up, and they've given up from the top down on this season. And maybe it's because Danny Ainge knows that there aren't a lot of other options out there. But for me, it's unforgivable. And the point is this. You know, you can't change the complexion of this team right now. You can't do that. You can't trade Kyrie Irving right now. You can't ship out the bad attitudes. So you can't take Terry Rozier and maybe Jaylen Brown and ship him out of town and replace him with somebody else. We're well past the trade deadline. This is the team that you have. And Danny did address any potential signings of free agents. And he said, look, we're going to leave that open roster spot available in case there's an injury. Or at the tail end of the season, maybe we'll add somebody. Maybe we won't. And that, ultimately, if somebody was to join the Celtics as a free agent right now and take over that 15th roster spot, it's not going to change the complexion of this team. What I don't understand, and maybe somebody could help me better understand this, is when it comes to the blame game, I feel like here in Boston, there is this unwillingness to blame stars. So does Kyrie Irving deserve more blame than Terry Rozier? He absolutely does. Even though Terry Rozier is having a more disappointing season than Kyrie Irving as the star and as the face of this franchise, occasionally you got to get in front of the microphones and say, my bad. Occasionally you got to get in front of the microphones and in front of the media and say, I need to do better. How many times have we given Tom Brady credit and Bill Belichick credit? When the Patriots lose, what does Bill Belichick say? We got to play better. We got to coach better. We got to defend better. Like, it's everybody. It's a team unit. And instead of that, we get Kyrie Irving. You know, we played a bunch of cuts of him last night. He got into it with Mark James a little bit here. You know, Kyrie Irving, after each and every game, he's doing a half an hour diatribe on what's wrong with this team. Yet it's never him. It's never him looking in the mirror or pointing at himself, even if he doesn't believe it. Occasionally, as the star and as the leader of a unit, it's up to you to take the responsibility and shoulder the blame. After all, if this Celtics team does turn it around like Kyrie has predicted, I mean, how many times now have we heard Kyrie say, just wait for the playoffs, and when he's asked why, he says, because I'm here. So he's already prematurely taking credit for playoff success that hasn't happened yet. So Kyrie wants to take all the success if and when this team manages to find some success in the postseason, but wants to absorb none of the blame right now. And I feel like he's teaching all of these other players, all the younger players here, everything that's wrong with the game of basketball and all the reasons why there's a certain segment of fans that don't like the NBA anymore. And it's because of people like Kyrie Irving, where they want all this attention. You know, they complain about it. They complain about the media. The media is to blame for everything in their minds, right? It's not them. Yet when the media goes to talk to them, You know, they don't want to talk to us, but then they do talk to us. And instead of clearing things up, what do? They yell, they bitch, they scream, they blame the media, and then they do it again the next day because ultimately they cannot live without the attention that the media gives them because they're all a little bit twisted in the head. But listening to Danny Ainge and his inability to pinpoint Kyrie Irving or his inability to place any blame on himself or place any blame on Brad Stevens is troubling to me. Not that just because, you know, you want to shake things up a little bit, that doesn't mean that you want to see Kyrie replaced. And that's where everybody goes with this. And just because I'm suggesting that maybe Brad takes a little bit of heat here from his boss doesn't mean that I want to see Brad replaced. Guess what? In the real world, if you're a sales superstar and you have a bad couple of months, by month three, you know, the leeway that you get, the extra rope that you get because you're a star, you bring in more money than anybody else. So you get yourself, you know, a little bit of a break for a month, even 2 months, because everybody has the slump. But by month three, your supervisor has you in his office holding you accountable, regardless of your track record. Because you know what? What have you done for me lately? And that's the thing here. Brad Stevens and the Celtics team, we can't keep talking about what they accomplished in years past. We cannot continue to talk about what last year's team did. I'm tired of it. And I'm tired of Danny Ainge, you know, resting on his laurels here. At some point, Brad is going to mix this thing up. At some point, he's going to change the starting lineup just because. At some point, he has got to change the way he plays Kyrie Irving just because. And when I say change the way, I mean, I think we all can see it. The Celtics are a much more efficient team when he plays off the ball. At some point here, you got to either, you know, fish or cut bait with a guy like Jaylen Brown, meaning, you know, Marcus Morris, he was a nice story, but he's out of here at the end of the season anyways. Jaylen Brown has the potential. He has the potential to be one of the premier two-way players in the league. He does. That's what everybody was saying based on the leap that he took last year. And know what's happened this year? There's been no leap. There's been no progression. Somebody has to absorb some of the blame for that. It's got to be Jaylen, but more than just Jaylen. You know, Brad Stevens is his coach. Ultimately, it's up to Brad to squeeze all the potential out of these guys. Meanwhile, Jaylen Brown is being blamed for having a bad attitude, but Jaylen knows that his number's not being called. Jaylen knows that plays aren't being drawn up for him. Jaylen knows that he has lost significant playing time this year to a guy that's not part of the Celtics' long-term future in Marcus Morris. So how is Jaylen, at a very young age, supposed to reconcile all that? And oh, by the way, as he has been demoted, the Celtics continue to lose. That's going to be maddening and very, very frustrating for a young player to go through. So the narrative here in Boston when it comes to the Celtics has always troubled me a little bit, whether the Celtics have been good, whether they've been bad. The fan base is so easily pleased. And that, to me, has never been okay. And as a Celtics guy first, as somebody that has always loved this team, I've always wished that the fans were a little bit more passionate and similar to, you know, be it the Red Sox fans or the Patriots fans, because those fans, they don't put up with anything. The Patriots this year, I got to tell you, taking your phone calls as Patriots fans this year, it was frustrating, but it was awesome because that team, despite their recent history, despite the fact that nobody's been more successful than the Patriots, you guys don't put up with anything as Patriots fans. When that team even shows signs, even the slightest bit of signs of having a difficult time, of going into a bit of a slump, of not performing up to expectations, you'll take Tom Brady to task. You'll take Bill Belichick to task. I got phone calls this year, a lot of them, suggesting that Brady was done, suggesting that Bill Belichick is done, that the game has passed him by, from hardcore Patriots fans, because the Patriots failed to win 13 or 14 games this year. You know, 11-5 is below their standards, and Patriots fans let them hear it. And I love that passion. Whether you agree or disagree with the premise, I love that passion. And Celtics fans, yeah, you fill up the garden, you get loud in the postseason, but nobody seems to care that this team has pissed away a golden opportunity this year. They have. They've pissed away all the momentum, the fact that this place was finally, Boston was finally a legit destination team. Between the momentum that was carried over by getting Al Horford, believe it or not, there was also momentum that was gained by Kevin Durant announcing the fact that the Celtics were his number two team. Then everything, all the positive buzz from Isaiah Thomas, flipping IT into Kyrie Irving, the talk about Anthony Davis, Boston was becoming a destination where players legit wanted to come and form their own big three here. And now look what's happened. Now look what's happened. If you lose Kyrie Irving, what do you have? Al Horford left? So Al Horford's going to opt into the final year of his overpriced deal, and that's your centerpiece? That's your franchise that's going to attract other guys here? I mean, the Celtics really have put themselves up against it into a pretty bad spot here. And if the Patriots were doing what the Celtics are doing, guess what? Celtics, Patriots fans, you would let them have it. But Celtics fans are lightweights. We really are. We let this team get away with murder. And with 22 games left, people are more focused in on, well, just how do we get this team right for the playoffs, as opposed to looking at the large sample size that we have here. I'm talking about 60 games that we have here. What the hell makes you think that the 60-game sample size that we have isn't enough? Like, what makes Celtics fans crazy enough to believe that, hey, they couldn't correct their issues in 60 games, but with 20 games to go, those issues, they're going to go away? Maybe they will. Maybe they'll surprise us. But by the looks of it, those issues aren't going to get fixed because of anything proactive that Danny Ainge does. Those issues aren't going to get fixed because of anything proactive that Brad Stevens does. Those issues are not going to get fixed because of any changes or adjustments Kyrie Irving makes to his game based on the talent around him this year. And that's the other part of this thing, is that Kyrie is unwilling to change his style at all. He wants the Celtics to conform to him. So right now, there's 14 players on the Boston Celtics. All right? So that's Kyrie and 13 other guys. And Kyrie's expectation is that all 13 guys around him change the manner and style in which they play to better Kyrie Irving, rather than Kyrie Irving changing the style just slightly and manner in which he plays to better play the Brad Stevens variation of basketball, which, by the way, got the best out of a guy like Isaiah Thomas. I mean, I'm telling you right now that if Kyrie Irving were even a little bit flexible and willing to listen to his coach and played the way his coach wants him to, if Brad Stevens could turn Evan Turner into a $70 million player, Brad Stevens turned Kelly O'Flipping-Linick into a $50 million player.
So much more better.
He turned Isaiah Thomas, a guy that was coming off the bench for the worst team in basketball, a guy whose only value in this league was as a off-the-bench, microwave, instant offense guy, into a legit MVP candidate who was on the cusp of making $100 million if it weren't for the injury that he suffered here to his hip. Brad Stevens has turned these players from essentially garbage into legit money-making machines. And what could he do here with a guy like Kyrie Irving? And I know that's why Brad was excited to get him here. But I know Brad is disappointed because Brad's realized that he can't coach Kyrie the way that he wants to. You think Brad wants to legit stand on the sidelines and watch Kyrie Irving pound the ball into the parquet for 18, 19, 20 seconds before he makes his own individual move and play hero ball? Is that the type of basketball that we've come to know from the Boston Celtics under Brad Stevens? Because that's what we're getting now. And nobody holds him accountable. As a matter of fact, if you go on Twitter, there's more people making excuses for Brad Stevens and more people making excuses for Kyrie Irving than there are people holding these guys accountable. And it is frustrating as all hell to me, because I know you guys know your basketball, yet nobody is willing to admit that the Celtics have major fundamental problems, and the problems are from the top. And I'm not suggesting that you fire Brad. What I am suggesting is that you light a fire under his ass if you're Danny Ainge, and you force the narrative a little bit. You force change a little bit here. But instead, they're going to roll out the same starting five, I'm sure, tomorrow night, and hope for change. And when you hope for the best, nothing is going to happen. And you guys out there, all you people that called during the Patriots season as they were struggling their way to 11-5 and eventually a Super Bowl, I mean, if I had a dollar for every call that we took here, for every tweet that we saw, for every article that was written, for every caller interaction or fan interaction that we were a part of that suggested that, you know, football has passed Bill Belichick by and it was time for Tom Brady to walk away, we would all be very rich people here at WEEI. We would. And ultimately, the Patriots got the last laugh. And the passion of the Patriots fans is what drives that team. You know, the fan interaction is such a huge part of it. The 35,000 people that showed up to Gillette to see the Patriots off, that legitimately emotionally affected the Patriots before they headed down to the Super Bowl. It did. They all talked about it for that first week. They did. It blew their mind that you guys, 35,000 people, after five championships, 35,000 people. And then when you got to compare and contrast it to what we saw from the other side with like maybe 1,000 people out there, it just showed the passionate, the level of passion that you guys have. So yeah, you make idiotic phone calls. We all have idiotic takes. We are over emotional. We judge too prematurely, but that's part of being a fan. And meanwhile, Celtics fans are like, oh, tomorrow, it's all going to get better tomorrow. And that's something I, as a Celtics fan, that's a mentality that I find insulting, and I have a hard time wrapping my head around it because I see a team that is littered with talent and it's underperforming. So my first instinct is, how do we fix the problem here? And to me, the first thing that you need to do is actually take the leadership and hold them accountable. And once they feel like, oh crap, I need to perform here, maybe they'll be willing to shake things up a little bit. But as long as Danny Ainge continues to reinforce everything that Brad's doing is cool with me, everything that Kyrie's doing is A-okay, well then nobody's going to feel any pressure to make any kind of change because ultimately the president of the team is doubling down and reinforcing that what these guys are doing is A-okay with him, so why bother changing it all? It is Sports Radio, WEI. When we come back, I promise you, I see you guys on the lines there. We'll get to your phone calls on how do we fix the Boston Celtics and why are Celtics fans so apathetic. You realize that the season is coming to a close sooner than later, right? You realize that this season is going to go down in history as one of the most disappointing seasons in Celtics history, and everybody's just A-okay. Everybody's job is safe, and Kyrie, we're going to kiss your ass some more because you're a star. It is Sports Radio, WEI. It is late night right here on Sports Radio, WEI. It's Patrick Gilroy with you, talking about the Celtics here and talking about, you know, this team and really their inability to take any sort of proactive stance here and actually force the issue and force the change that we're all looking for. The number to join us here tonight is 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. And to the texter that says, Patrick, relax. The Celtics will do what the Patriots did and the Red Sox did. Both were counted out late in their regular seasons as well. Trust me. So here's the difference. The Patriots, A, they have playoff success. They have championship pedigree. They've got the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback of all time. So despite the fact that their regular season wasn't as impressive as what we're used to seeing the Patriots typically do, ultimately what happened? They were 11-5. If they were 13-3, the narrative would have been very, very different around here. They got hot and healthy at the right time, and they still had the right personnel on that team. And there was still an inherent amount of trust within that organization, from Robert Kraft to Bill Belichick to Tom Brady to Gronk, right, to Julian Edelman. So the core was still there. And ultimately, it's the core that carried them to winning the Super Bowl. And as far as the Red Sox go, well, you know, their pitching wound up being their MVP, and their pitching wound up carrying the day. And you wound up getting outstanding pitching performances in the postseason from a guy like David Price. You couldn't expect it going in, and ultimately, he delivered. So all the credit in the world goes to the Red Sox and goes to David Price and the rest of that pitching staff for doing the unthinkable. But when you look at what the Red Sox did, you're sort of making my point for me. What did Cora do? He completely changed the way that the Red Sox used their pitching staff. One of their biggest weaknesses throughout the regular season was their bullpen. Their bullpen was awful. You know, they had a problem getting to Kimbrel because their bullpen had a tendency to implode. So what did they do? They turned one of their biggest weaknesses into their biggest strength because they knew that the postseason was a condensed amount of time. So you can ask your other pitchers. You can ask your starting pitchers. You can ask everybody to take on an additional workload. And they started using starters out of the bullpen. And they wound up using other guys that they weren't able to use throughout the regular season as bullpen arms. So they turned one of their biggest areas of weakness into a strength. They were proactive in affecting change. And this Celtics team, in my opinion, they are long overdue for some change here. And whether that change is as simple as tweaking the starting lineup or drastically reducing the roles of somebody like a Marcus Morris to increase the roles of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, something's got to give here. But as long as Brad Stevens continues to kiss Kyrie's ass, let him dictate the way that this team plays, forgetting about running the ball, running the offense through Gordon Hayward, or God forbid, running the offense through the high post through a guy like Al Horford like they've done the last few years. And oh, by the way, that's been just a little bit successful for this team. They're not doing that anymore. because they're allowing a guy like Kyrie Irving to play hero ball. They're allowing Jason Tatum to follow suit and play hero ball. And ultimately, it's up to Danny Ainge and it's up to Brad Stevens to put an end to this stuff. But if you listen to Danny Ainge on WEEI today, it's all sunshine and lollipops over there at the Garden. And Brad Stevens, you know, he just looks completely defeated right now, and he seems unwilling to make any sort of drastic changes here. So it is Sports Radio, WEEI, room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Let's get back out to the calls. Let's go to Joe. Joe's in Uxbridge. Joe, you're next up here on WEEI.
Hey, man. That was a really funny comparison, comparing the Celtics to the Pats. The Pats were the least talented team that we've seen in quite some time. And they overachieved. They're the hardest. They're a really hardworking team.
Yep.
The Celtics is the exact opposite of the Pats, so you can't compare the two.
Well, hold on. Hold on, Joe. It wasn't my comparison. I was just reading a text, brother.
No. I'm not blaming
you. Right.
Whoever made that comparison.
Yeah, I got you.
I mean, I had a completely other topic I wanted to discuss, but that just drove me nuts.
Yeah, what do you got?
You can't compare the two. The problem is that every basketball team takes the personality of their best player. You've seen that with KG. You've seen that with IT. You see it all the time. I mean, even last year without Kyrie, you know, the team was young. They were excited. They were energetic. Kyrie just has that different personality that just brings everyone down. I just watch him. I listen to him talk. I get depressed just watching him talk. I mean, watching him with the ball, I can't, you know, he's a magician. As a basketball player, I love that guy. But as an overall leader, that guy is probably the worst leader you can pick. Out of all the superstars that you can line up in the league, I don't care if it's top 25, he's probably the worst one that you can pick out.
Here's the troubling thing. Joe, I'll let you finish, but here's the troubling thing, yeah. Right? You said he's a magician, and he is. And here's the thing that I'm having a real hard time reconciling. And whenever I go down this road on the air, I literally fight with myself. My brain is fighting with itself because one of my biggest complaints about Kyrie Irving is his inability or unwillingness to run Brad Stevens' offense the way that we've seen it be run the last 4 years, you know, running it through a guy like Al Horford in the high post, everybody, the ball pinging around until the best shot is the open shot, all that stuff that worked for the Celtics. Now we get to watch Kyrie Irving, you know, dribble the clock down to, you know, 6-7 seconds remaining on the shot clock. He goes to make a move for himself. Sometimes that will result in a double team and somebody gets a good look. Other times it's all, you know, chaos and panic. But ultimately, Kyrie is dictating the Celtics offense, and that's very uncomfortable for me. It's not how this team typically runs their offense. That being said, let's go back to game 7 against the Cavaliers last year when nobody could score. You know, in the playoffs, especially when you get deep in the playoffs, you do need somebody that's capable of taking the shot clock down to 5, 6, 7 seconds and making a move for themselves, getting to the basket, getting to the free throw line, converting on 3-point play opportunities the old school way. You know, that's how you stop momentum on the road. You know, all those things, that's what Kyrie is doing, and that's what Kyrie is capable of doing. But he's unable to adjust his game to the regular season. And I'm afraid what's going to happen here, Joe, is when the postseason rolls around, yeah, Kyrie's going to do his thing, but the Celtics are going to be such a broken unit by that time that his teammates won't be there to help elevate him and make this team perform as well as I thought they were going into the season.
No, I mean, I completely agree with you, and it drives me nuts because I want Kyrie back at some point, but then part of me just hates the guy just watching him. And like, the worst part is that, like I said, the whole team takes its personality. You watch last year's games, and the teams are setting good screens. They're setting each other up. They're happy for each other. This year, even with or without Kyrie on the court, the team has its personality. They don't set good screens. They all just want to score. Everybody's out for their own, you know, their own glory. And what these guys don't understand is that it's not all about, you know, individual statistics. Look at Marcus Smart. That guy has, like, one of the worst statistics, but he got paid. No one's going to want to pay these guys. It doesn't matter what their stats are. If they're playing really crappy, if they're, you know, if you look at their overall numbers, they're atrocious.
No,
it's not going to help them out.
So, you're right.
And that's exactly the problem is that, you know, like I said, I've watched every game this year. I watched every game for the past, like, 3 years, especially with the DVR. I can't stand, like, how they don't play together. They don't set each other up. There's no, you know, I see the fake excitement from the bench, with Yabusele. But other than that, like, no one really likes each other. And how do you root for a team that don't even like each other?
Hey, Joe, you know, like, you're 1,000% spot on, except one thing. Yabu is really excited. His excitement's not fake. Everybody else's, you can question it. Yabu is legit excited to be there. So listen, it is Sports Radio, WEEI, room for you guys tonight at 617-779-7937. Good stuff, Joe. One of the things that Joe brings up is one of the things that we all have a hard time sort of reconciling. And Ordway likes to pretend that when we talk about this stuff that we're forgetting that Kyrie Irving played 60 games for this team last year. Nobody's forgetting that. But the fact is, this team played different last year with Kyrie Irving for those 60 games. They played exactly the way that Joe just described, where, you know, they played for each other. They liked each other. They were busy setting screens for each other, helping each other get the best possible shot opportunities. And, all by the way, Kyrie still got his. You know, but the difference is, A, expectations, because the moment Gordon Hayward went down last year, guess what? Expectations changed. The Celtics went from being, you know, this favorite, this heavy favorite in the Eastern Conference, to lovable underdogs that were overachievers. They embraced that role, and they embraced it for the majority of the season. And then when Kyrie went down in March, they doubled down on that role, and they thrived in that role. The other thing here that nobody wants to take into consideration is that let's turn back the clock to last year. And Jason Tatum was a rookie. He was a rookie having a nice rookie campaign, but he didn't really explode onto the scene until the fourth quarter of the season, you know, the back portion of the season. I'm talking about late February into March, and then especially in the playoffs. Jaylen Brown really elevated his game the back half of last season into the playoffs. Those two guys were their best versions of themselves after Kyrie Irving left, essentially, after he got hurt, and they were both continuing to elevate their games throughout the Celtics' playoff run. So during the 60-game period last year in which Kyrie Irving was a part of this team and this team was finding success, those guys had completely different expectation levels and completely different mentalities than they have this year. You know, they reached a certain level of success last year, and with that success came a certain level of expectation. Expectation for shot attempts, expectation for production, expectation for minutes, expectation for plays being called for them. And none of those things are happening this year. And no matter how talented the other four guys are around Kyrie Irving, there is a tremendous amount of standing around and watching happening here. It is not a typical Brad Stevens-led team where Brad is one of the more brilliant basketball minds on the planet, yet nothing that this Celtics team is doing this year is brilliant at all. It's some of the worst offense you'll ever see. This is rec league offense where you've got one talented guy thinking that he is worlds better than everybody else, so he is going to play hero ball, and maybe if he gets double or triple teamed, maybe he'll find you for an open jump shot or an open layup. But if you miss that open jumper or miss that open layup or it slips through your hands, you might not get the ball again for a while. And that's why guys like Jason Tatum feel the need to be a bit of a hungo. And Jaylen Brown, that's why he looks unsure of himself when he gets the ball. He doesn't know what to do with it half the time because he's like, oh, hot potato, what do I do now? He literally goes 6, 7, 9 minute stretches without seeing the basketball. It's unbelievable. How do you expect these guys to want to perform at the highest level, stay hungry, stay eager, and give the Celtics their best when they're becoming essentially observers of Kyrie Irving's ball handling skills? You know, in a lot of ways, it's like they're ticket holders with the best ticket in the garden, you know, standing by and watching Kyrie be a magician with the basketball. And while that may work for the And One mixtape tour, and that way it may work for the Globetrotters, it does not work when it comes to winning NBA basketball games. The irony to that is, it might be needed to win in the fourth quarter in the closing moments of close playoff games. So I have a hard time reconciling that fact as well. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. Let's grab one more here before the break. Let's go to Mike. Mike's in North Providence. Mike, you're next up here on WEEI.
Hi, Patrick. Hey, yeah, Mike. You know, I mean, thanks for noticing about Brown. I talk about this. I mean, he can go many a minute without even touching the ball.
So I watched the last two games last night on DVR. I couldn't sleep. I got home. It took me 2.5 hours. So I got home. It was like 4:30 in the morning, and I had a choice to make. I could either go to bed for a couple of hours and get up at 6:30 or just sort of sit. So I sat, and I had DVR'd the last two games, and I literally got my iPhone out and started the timer on it. And there was three possessions throughout those two games where he went 11 minutes on the floor, 11-minute stretch, without seeing the basketball. It was horrifying.
Yeah, and believe me, that didn't just start the last two games. That's been a problem for a while now. And it's amazing, honestly, that he's able to put up the stats that he does, because it's like it's not they're barely doing anything to help him, and they're actively subverting him by doing this. It's like making him play with ankle weights and one hand tied behind his back, and he's still outperforming somebody like Marcus Morris, who's not having this done to him.
Yeah.
And it's like he's the better player, so it's insanity. You know, you brought up you were talking about the Patriots before. You know, the Pats are a perfect example of what the Celtics need to do. You see, the Pats, on the offensive end, it was Tom coming to grips with the fact that he's old Tom. He's not the old Tom. He's old Tom Brady now.
Yep.
And saying, you know what? I got to lean on Sony. I have to lean on the running game. I can't be Mr. Everything anymore. And in the playoffs, you know, Sony had the same exact number of rushing attempts and right yards that Emmitt Smith did back in 1992. Identical.
And Emmitt Smith was an MVP, and he was...
Yeah, Emmitt Smith was an all-time great running back, except Emmitt only rushed for three touchdowns. Sony rushed for six.
Right.
Just to put this into perspective.
I got you.
And on the defensive end, it was the emergence of people like J.C. Jackson and them playing themselves and getting themselves organized to the point where you finally get to the Super Bowl and they're an elite defense.
But, Mike, it was more than Tom's willingness to allow a running back to share the spotlight or take the majority of the workload away from him. It was Bill's willingness to also adjust the way that the Patriots play and put trust in a guy like that.
I told Ordway and company before the season began that he was intending to run the ball more, that choosing Sony and the offensive lineman and switching out the little wide receivers for big wide receivers was telegraphing that he wanted to run the ball more, and he wanted to do that because Tom's getting old and he wanted to protect them.
Yep.
And they laughed at me.
I gotcha.
And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, if this was any other coach with any other quarterback, you would obviously think that he's doing this, but somehow because it's Tom that Bill's doing this doesn't count. And then, so I think that Bill was intending this all along.
But if Bill and Tom Brady, with their level of success that they've hit, they're both first ballot Hall of Famers, two of the best to ever do it, arguably at their positions as coach and quarterback, if their egos are at a point where they're willing to put that aside to do what's best for the Patriots and put themselves in the best position to win, then why the hell can't a guy like Kyrie Irving or Brad Stevens adjust on the fly here? I think that you probably noticed it in last night's game. You know, there's something to the point where I'm not suggesting that the Celtics are better off without Kyrie Irving, but I do think that they're much better when he plays off the ball. The ball continues to move, and he still gets his offense. So why do we continue to play him at point guard and watch him be the hero?
Well, I mean, part of the thing is that he listened to him talk about, like, you know, Brown and Tatum. He talks about them like they're, like, promising role players.
Yeah.
I mean,
yep.
You know, these guys, I mean, like I pointed out before, you know, about, like, you know, they're both over a plus 100 on, you know, since January 1st. And they don't even play together a lot of the time. So it's basically whoever plays with them does well because they're playing with them. And when they're not playing with them, they don't do well because they're not playing with them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's how good they are. And people forget, basketball is played in the continuum. And this is part of what's going on against my feeling about Kyrie. It goes from offense to defense and from defense to offense, right?
Yep.
And you're talking about Brown and Tatum. They're like top-tier two-way players, right? They can score 20 points a game efficiently, and they can play great defense at the other end.
Jaylen Brown was on a short list this year going into the season as guys with a ceiling similar to a Kawhi. A great two-way player was his ceiling. And that guy has taken such a hit as far as his reputation around the league this year. His trade value, which was once sky high, is now essentially in the toilet. And that's not his fault. You know, it's the Celtics' fault. They put him in this position.
You know, one of talk about Kyrie has been kind of put in the, are the Celtics better without Kyrie? I think the real question is, does Kyrie make that much of a difference out there that he's worth $40 million a year? And I don't think he is. And I think that Terry can go out there and basically fit better into the team identity, not just ball movement, but defense, at $16 million or even not even that much.
So right? Here's where you and I disagree a little bit. So I asked this question about a week ago, and I said, you know, the 82-game regular season, the Celtics this year might wind up with 50 wins. It's been disappointing. But on average, I feel like whether it's Terry Rozier or Kyrie Irving with everybody else on this team, you're going to get somewhere between 52 and 58 wins a year, regardless of who your starting point guard is, with everybody else on this roster. The one place where I disagree is, come playoff time, you do need a guy like Kyrie that's capable of taking that shot and creating for himself and being an elite shot maker. And Terry Rozier is not that guy.
So but the thing is, right, is that I think something to keep in mind here is to me, it's the Bill Russell principle. It's that people always forgot, like, what made him better than Wilt is that Russell played a style of basketball that befitted five players, and Wilt played a style of basketball that befitted himself, right? And on any given possession, any one of the five players can hit a shot. And on our team, we have a lot of guys that can score. And I'd like to point out the fact that we had a bunch of kids out there, and kids routinely failed. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And honestly, a much more veteran group of Houston Rockets made our guys look like a bunch of marksmen after what they did in their own particular Game 7. They were they made our guys look like they were cool and collected.
I know.
You know?
And how many years have we heard Wardway, you know, preach on here that you only win in the NBA with veterans? I mean, he's been doing it for 25 years, and meanwhile, last year's Celtics completely sort of were rewriting those rules.
Yeah, but the thing is that in the end, it caught up to them.
Yep.
But you know what? They could continue to get older and more seasoned. They need to be backed. I mean, the thing is that I think people have like a sort of naive belief that like if you gave Kyrie Irving 18 shots, or put it this way, if you gave the Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum Kyrie Irving's 18 shots, that Kyrie would score 10 more points, and he wouldn't. He scored 2 more points. That's the fine line of like what divides players in the NBA. Maybe not even that. And the thing is, right, we have multiple guys on this team that can score 20 points per game. And the question you have to ask yourself and you have to really focus on is this guy worth $40 million a year, especially with his injury concerns, acting as if he's the only person that can score, when in fact we have multiple guys on this team that can score.
Yeah, I'm with you, Mike. And listen, I appreciate the phone call. I'm up against it here. I'm with you to a certain extent. So I'm not convinced that in the long term the Celtics are better off without Kyrie. And I know it's a lot of money. It's a huge commitment. You're talking about a 5-year max contract. You're talking about paying him $60 million more than any other team could. And if that knee goes out, if there's an injury, now you're talking about having your salary cap tied up with Gordon Hayward on one leg and potentially Kyrie Irving with one knee. There are inherent risks involved. But Kyrie Irving is an elite player, an elite shot maker. I just wish that he would be willing to behave like a leader, behave like a star, and maybe tweak his game, adjust his game a little bit. And instead of making everybody else, all 14 other Boston Celtics, including Brad Stevens, adjust to him, maybe for once understand that this team's level of success is not where it was supposed to be. Maybe accept some of that responsibility and maybe just try it out. Try it out and listen to the coach. Play off the ball. Don't absorb the first 18 seconds of the shot clock, you know, dribbling around and getting nowhere. And maybe, just maybe, if you lean on Brad Stevens, he can turn you into the next Isaiah Thomas. You know, somebody that's actually going to be in the top 5 in the MVP race. It is Sports Radio, WEEI. When we come back, you have any final thoughts here, we'll wrap this thing up, but there's still a little bit of time and room for you guys at 617-779-7937. Final segment here, late night, Sports Radio, WEEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. Still a few minutes for you guys if you want to get in at 617-779-7937. You text the program at 37937. So when I get back here again tomorrow night for the final late night of the week, we only do 10 to midnight tomorrow. So by the time we get on the air tomorrow, the Celtics will be somewhere in the third quarter in their home game against the Wizards. Now, the Wizards are not a playoff team this year. It's a perfect opportunity for the Celtics to grab themselves a much-needed win. And I don't care how they do it. I heard a lot of people today, including Dale Arnold, talk about last night's game against the Blazers. And the fact is this. Everybody was saying that if they had come back and stolen that victory, it would not have been a good victory. They wouldn't have been impressed. I'm not about being impressed at this point if I'm the Celtics. I hope eventually they're able to string together a couple of wins, maybe some wins that have the ability to change the momentum of this season, And that's going to start tomorrow night at home against a lottery team. It has to, because you can't help but look ahead at the schedule, knowing that there's just a finite amount of games remaining. And Danny mentioned it today in his interview with Dale and Keith. You know, he said that he can't envision this team waiting for the playoffs to get it together. You know, they've got this last 20 games of the regular season to start to turn this thing around and tweak some things if necessary. And Danny did mention potentially tweaking the lineup if Brad sees that it's the right thing to do. I don't know what else Brad needs to see here. I think the evidence is there that something needs to change, something pretty drastic needs to change. And you think that it's been bad around here? For Celtics fans that are getting on me about being too tough on this team, too tough on Kyrie Irving, God forbid, you know, we're tough on the Celtics' best player. God forbid we take their superstar to task. Yet, like, Paul Pierce never got a bad rap around here. Like, Paul Pierce was never, you know, the victim of all your phone calls. Are people crazy, or are they stupid, or are they just forgetting? And we all want to remember Paul Pierce post the Big Three era. You know, after Paul Pierce got himself a KG, and after Paul Pierce got himself a Ray Allen, and, oh, by the way, a Perk and a Rondo. And I'm not taking anything away from Paul Pierce. But early on in Paul Pierce's days, it was clear that he was a much better basketball player than Antoine Walker. But without Antoine Walker, the Celtics don't get to the 0-1-0-2 Eastern Conference Finals. That team desperately needed a leader. That team desperately needed somebody to hold the rest of the Celtics accountable. And Paul Pierce wasn't that guy. He didn't have that mentality. He didn't have that attitude. And you guys let him hear it. Because once Antoine got shipped out of here, the real leader was gone, and Paul Pierce was the best player on a disappointing Celtics team, a Celtics team that won the Atlantic Division and bowed out in the first round to the Indiana Pacers, and what, Paul Pierce embarrassed himself. He faked the jaw injury and got up on that podium with that embarrassing head wrap around himself. He didn't know if he was coming or going, and the fans couldn't take it anymore. You know what I mean? So if we can get on a Celtic legend like Paul Pierce, why can't we get on a guy like Kyrie Irving? Why do we feel the need to kiss his ass so much? And I feel like it's because it's the modern-day NBA and the modern-day NBA player. And the other part of it, and we'll get into some of this tomorrow night, is I really believe that some of you crazy people out there, like legit certifiable crazy people, and you know who you are, right? I feel like some of you legitimately believe that free agents will choose or will not choose a city or a town like Boston because of the fan interaction or because of the media. Like, because of what Gilroy says after midnight on WEEI, the Celtics have a lesser chance of getting a primetime free agent because I might take him to task. Are you guys crazy? Like, that's the stuff that I can't wrap my head around. Guys are going to make their decisions based on money, based on situation, based on where their friends are at, and based on winning. They're not going to make their decision based on what some schlub working the overnight shift part-time on a radio station has to say about them. And if they do, then that says something more about their mental makeup, and maybe that's a guy that you don't want leading your team if they let a guy like me bother them or a guy like me get in the way of their decision-making. Anyways, it is Sports Radio, WEI. When we get back here tomorrow night, we'll have a much better idea if the Celtics are able to pull off a win. It's a much-needed win. For my sake, can you hear my voice? My voice has been going for weeks here, and it's because I've spent the last month screaming at the flipping TV trying to get the Celtics to wake the hell up. And I'm failing, and now I'm losing my voice. I make my living with my voice, not just here on the radio, but I'm a sales guy. Without my voice, I am nothing. Without my voice, I have got literally no ability to earn an income at either one of my jobs. And it's all the Celtics' fault that I'm losing my voice. It's Kyrie Irving's fault, matter of fact. I need to hold Kyrie Irving and Brad Stevens accountable and responsible for the fact that I won't be able to earn an income. Your fault, not my fault. That's Kyrie's mentality, so it works for him. Might as well work for me. We'll know tomorrow night which version of the Celtics show up. And I hope it's the good one, because take a look at that schedule following tomorrow night's game against the Lottery Wizards. Yeah, it's the Rockets. And then it's the Golden State Warriors. Holy crap, it's going to get ugly around here. It is Sports Radio, WEI. My name is Patrick Gilroy. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow night at 10. Until then, bye-bye.
They want this team to go bye-bye. This team's not ready to go bye-bye yet.
Whoa.
You realize that this season is going to go down in history as one of the most disappointing seasons, and everybody's just A-OK. Everybody's job is safe, and Kyrie, we're going to kiss your ass some more because you're a star.
You're damn right. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.